and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, February 8, 2021. South Sudan is set to receive hundreds of doses of COVID-19 vaccine.
I'm happy to let you know that the 864,000 doses is from AstraZeneca, and AstraZeneca is using the same cold chain like we are using for the routine vaccination.
And students in Jonglei, Upper Nile and Warrap states miss school examinations due to insecurity.
There is no any other way for us to take the exam if the personnel in charge are not given an access and they are not secure to go.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's health ministry says the country has ordered 800,000 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine scheduled for delivery by the end of February. The Director General for Preventive Health Services at the National Ministry says the vaccine will be administered to vulnerable groups. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Health officials told reporters in Juba on Sunday that South Sudan is likely to receive over 800,000 doses of a COVID-19 vaccine by the end of February. Dr. John Rumunu, Director General of Preventive Health Services at the National Health Ministry, says South Sudan met all the requirements to acquire the vaccine. Dr. Rumunu says COVAX assessed South Sudan for all the available vaccines and determined that AstraZeneca suits the country's capacity to preserve the vaccine. COVAX stands for COVID-19 Vaccines Global Access, a global initiative aimed at ensuring equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines. The initiative is led by the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, the World Health Organization, and the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations.
I'm happy to let you know that the 864,000 doses is from AstraZeneca, and AstraZeneca is using the same cold chain like we are using for the routine vaccination, meaning you need fridges that can keep vaccines in a condition of 2 to 8 degrees centigrade. We have that all over the country.
Concerns have been raised over the safety and efficacy of preserving COVID-19 vaccines in South Sudan. Concerns triggered mostly by misinformation that is circulating on social media platforms like WhatsApp and Facebook. Dr. Guyo Guracha, the World Health Organization's emergency coordinator in Juba, says the AstraZeneca vaccine is safe to use in South Sudan. He says WHO has protocols in place for confirming a vaccine's safety and efficacy before the vaccine is approved for use in any given country.
There should be no worry about the safety and efficacy because we have an elaborate mechanism in place as WHO, and the country also has its own. Many countries also will be looking at it on their own independently. And actually, as a matter of fact, AstraZeneca is used by countries even before WHO has issued emergency use listing by just subjecting it through their own regulatory system.
South Sudan Health Ministry spokesperson Dr. Loy Thaw strongly advised the public against sharing misleading information about the COVID-19 vaccine to avoid misconceptions about the vaccines.
We need to be very, very careful in handling those information and sharing those information with, let's say, innocent people who may not necessarily have their own analytical capacity. I mean, if somebody wanted actually to do something against, let's say, African or black race, why should it be through vaccine?
Dr. Loy says Africans are consuming many other common drugs from the Western world, like malaria medications such as artemisinin. Dr. Loy urges people to be responsible and take the coronavirus preventive measures seriously.
Part of the reason why partial lockdown is mandatory is the behavior of our people by themselves. If you go, I don't know now, I need to go and visit actually, but if you go to Konya, before partial lockdown was declared, you will not have a sense that there is anything called COVID-19 in this country. People are just mingling, crowd, and nobody cares. Hardly people are wearing masks.
Health officials are reporting a rapid increase in the number of COVID-19 cases in parts of the country, with Central Equatoria State leading with over 300 new cases. As of Sunday, South Sudan registered cumulative number 4,609 positive cases, 861 active cases, 66 deaths, and 3,692 recoveries. Of the active cases, 6 severe cases are admitted at the infectious disease unit in Juba. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Still on COVID-19, the first vaccine against COVID-19 have gone mostly to wealthier countries. Now several middle-income countries are getting their shots. Many come from Chinese and Russian drug makers. But critics note that these developers have not been forthcoming with data on their vaccine's safety and efficacy. For VOA News, Steve Baragona has more.
An indigenous nurse was the first person to get vaccinated in the Brazilian state of Amazonas. The shot came from Chinese company Sinovac. Tests in Brazil found the vaccine was about 78% effective in preventing life-threatening cases of COVID-19 and about 50% effective overall. Not bad, says Sao Paulo University microbiologist Natalia Pasternak.
Nós temos uma boa vacina. Não é a melhor vacina do mundo. Não é a vacina ideal. É uma boa vacina.
But tests elsewhere have been inconsistent. Early data in Turkey show 91% efficacy. In Indonesia, it was 65%. The vaccine's actual efficacy is a mystery because Sinovac has not publicly released the clinical trial results. That's concerning, says Vanderbilt University infectious disease professor William Schaffner.
There's an old saying in clinical research, in God we trust, all others must provide data. And we would certainly like to see the data.
Another Chinese company, Sinopharm, says its vaccine is 79% effective, but it has not released its data either. Several countries are welcoming the Chinese vaccines anyway, at least in part because most other vaccines have been snapped up by wealthier countries. Brazil's Butantan Institute tested the Sinovac vaccine. Director Dimas Covas says working with the Chinese company was the right move.
Porque se isso não tivesse acontecido, nós não estaríamos com milhões de doses prontas na prateleira, aguardando o momento do uso.
The two Chinese vaccines were made using techniques that have been around for decades. The flu and rabies vaccines are made the same way, but that does not guarantee they are safe and effective for everyone, Schaffner says.
We're sure they are effective to some degree. Exactly how effective they are, particularly in older patients, who obviously are the persons who are going to be more severely affected, is something that we'd like to know a great deal more about.
Vaccines from drug companies Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech appear to be more effective than the Chinese shots. But those vaccines need to be kept extremely cold. That makes them hard to deliver in many parts of the world, notes Johns Hopkins University vaccine expert William Moss.
They're not the ideal vaccine, and particularly, you know, for many low- and middle-income countries.
The Chinese vaccines are stable at refrigerator temperatures. So, too, is Russia's Sputnik V. Like the Chinese companies, the Russian developers have been criticized for distributing the vaccine without sharing test results. But on Tuesday, they published a study in the medical journal The Lancet showing it was more than 91% effective. That puts it in the top tier, Moss says.
This is what we wanted to see. This is very encouraging, I think, data, and really good for the world to have another vaccine.
Welcome news in Argentina, Hungary, and elsewhere, where Sputnik V shots are already being given. Steve Baragona, VOA News.
As more and more people get COVID-19 vaccine, healthcare experts are tackling the issue of how someone can prove they have been vaccinated. Lesia Bucklets has more in this story narrated by Anna Rice.
A short form, a number of health-related questions, a quick shot, and then a vaccine card. That's the standard process when someone gets a COVID-19 vaccine in the U.S. The vaccination card is a small paper that the health professional fills out by hand. Maryland school teacher Maron Sivaslan got one recently.
She told me, I can't lose it. I have to have it, and I have to make sure I take it with me when I get my second dose.
The vaccination card is a reminder that in 3 weeks, it's time for the second dose, but also a backup for the nation's electronic record keeping.
So everybody who gets a COVID-19 vaccine in the U.S., in the state that they're in, that information gets electronically put into the registry.
But Tan says he believes the vaccination certificate can easily be falsified and wants a new system the World Health Organization is considering.
I think there has to be validation. There has to be a way to validate that information, which is why I think having something that is digitally secure, which is what the smart certificate that WHO is looking at, is needed.
The World Health Organization already has a so-called yellow card, which essentially serves as an official vaccination record needed to enter certain countries. The idea is to do the same for COVID-19 vaccinations. The International Air Transportation Association is suggesting a vaccination app.
Travel Pass is essentially an app which will be designed to be downloaded on a customer's phone, either directly from Apple iOS or Google Play for Android, or through an airline's app. And eventually that would allow a customer to be able to digitally identify themselves.
The International Economic Forum is also working on developing a similar digital passport, an app called Common Pass. It's an IBM platform to store all the medical data.
So in the U.S., everybody is required to send the vaccination activities to the state. And the state keeps this information into a registry. And what we are working on now is connecting the platform to the registries so we can also expose that information back to you.
But relying on an app worries human rights activists who stress that not everyone has a smartphone.
Connecting vaccination with the need to have an expensive smartphone doesn't serve civil liberties or civil rights purposes.
Developers say the apps should be fully functional by the end of 2021. Officials say a lot depends on how fast vaccinations are administered around the world and when countries reopen their borders. Фалеся Бакалец in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, primary school students in Jonglei, Warrap and Upper Nile states miss final examination. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What are you thankful for?
I'm thankful for life. The fact that I am able to live a full life and be able to do the kind of things that I want to do.
I'm very thankful for my life, my children, and my job. My job helps me to get money. I'm very, very thankful for that.
I thank Allah for my life and for my parents.
I'm grateful because I've attained at least education. The education is going to help me get a job and get other opportunities in life.
I'm thankful for my family, my friends, my husband, my children, and all the lovely friends of mine who have been helpful to me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Nearly 1,000 candidates from Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Warrap states will miss this year's primary living examinations due to insecurity. South Sudan's Minister for General Education says security officials in parts of Jonglei, Upper Nile, and Warrap prevented officials from the Ministry of Education from accessing schools in those areas. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
General Education Minister Awud Dengashwil says 930 students will miss their primary living examinations today because of insecurity in SPLM-IO-controlled areas of Jonglei and Upper Nile states and parts of Warrap state due to intercommunal violence. Deng confirmed officials from her ministry have been unable to access those areas.
There is no any other way for us to take the exam if the personnel in charge are not given an access and they are not secure to go. And that means the examination will not be secure because we are trying our level best to get a correct assessment of this student who are sitting today in South Sudan.
Achil says the ministry contracted a bank recently to deliver money to Nero in Jonglei State to pay for teachers' incentives. She says she was surprised to learn security operatives in Nero detained the agent for 3 days and confiscated all of the money. Achil did not say how much money was confiscated and never returned. Achil says the money has not been recovered and teachers have not been paid. She accuses SPLM-IO security forces of not adhering to orders from their partners in the national government.
When we reopen the schools, the authority there opened all the schools. And when we said, please don't open these schools, the answer was negative. So we had to engage the leadership of the IO. And the third incident is when we closed the school, they also refused to close. So we have to engage the leadership of the IO to talk to them to close. So it means nothing from us here goes on.
Achil says there have been security concerns in Central Equatoria and Upper Nile states that would have stopped pupils from writing exam, but she says governors of both states resolved the matter. She says state officials transferred students from Lanyo and Morobo counties where they had experienced insecurity to Yei in order to sit for their exams. Achil says her ministry is making plans for pupils who will miss exams today.
In Warrap State, one particular area that we have no anybody to supervise these exams, we have suspended them not to take place today. But after this exam, we will organize for the rest of the student to take their exam in a safe environment where national security and the police and the examiners are given access to go to.
SPLM-IO Deputy Military Spokesperson Colonel Lampo Gabriel denies SPLM-IO security forces blocked national ministry officials from accessing areas of Jonglei and Upper Nile. He says if that had happened, Minister Chwil should have raised the concern to the Joint Defense Board or JDB, which oversees security situation in both the states.
The JDB was formed to have full command of control and control of the forces to the agreement. That includes the SPLM, the SPLIO, the national police from both sides, the organized forces from both sides. That is why we have the chief of defense force of the SPLM, the chief of the chief of general staff of the SPLIO, as members or co-chairs of the JDB. We also have the director general of national security from both sides as members of the JDB. Now, why would the Minister of National Examination forego all these people and come up with a solution that unless the police and national security are taken to the examination will take place? The JDB never got any information from the ministry to protect, to give protection to the examination center.
Moses Deng, the head teacher for Romaboth Primary School in Tonj, East County of Warrap State, says 94 pupils in his school will miss examinations. He says education officials delivered examination papers to his school this morning. He says while students were already writing their examinations, police officers came to the school and informed the pupils to stop writing because of insecurity concerns raised by the National Education Minister.
In Tonj East, we have some schools where you have received the exam. One of them
is Nababa. Also, only. So these three schools sat for their exam, leaving three schools. These three schools are Umabu, Father Ivo Chikachi, and Nokwai Primary Schools. So these three schools belong to the white young community. So we are wondering why the white community is affected by this insecurity, leaving others community.
Deng says he believes the education ministry is deliberately targeting his community. A total of 64,138 pupils are to be sitting for primary leaving examinations this year. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino from Juba.
Still on schools, Kenyan public schools have been experiencing a wave of schools unrests and growing cases of arson, with dormitories being the main targets. At least 25 boarding schools have been set ablaze since January 4th this year, when schools reopen after closing for 10 months due to the coronavirus pandemic. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, the government says it will start arresting and persecuting students found plotting and executing arson in schools.
Education Chief Administrative Secretary Zaki Nudhia says the government will no longer condone such unruly behaviors in schools across the country that have resulted in the loss of property worth millions of shillings.
We shall treat you as a criminal and we shall take you through the procedure a criminal is undertaken by putting you in cell, taking you to court and jailing you through the courts because of your behavior. Because you cannot bring down millions of worth investment and let you scot-free. And this government is both your government and the government of the parents. You are impoverishing by burning down the property and we shall take very stern action against you. I am calling you to forthwith cease your behavior.
Police spokesperson Charles Owino also warned that the criminal records of those that would be found responsible would be used against them for the rest of their adult lives.
We need to remind the boys and girls that have started burnings and maliciously destroying school properties that all persons aged 8 years and above are criminally liable for any criminal acts or omissions that they commit. They have a criminal responsibility as long as you are 8 years and above. Upon prosecution, your criminal records shall be kept by the Criminal Records Office at the DCI for the rest of your life. This will definitely affect your future career prospects.
However, Kenya National Union of Teachers Secretary General Wilson Soshon says one way to deal with the wave of unrest in public schools is to completely abolish boarding schools. He says this would enable parents to regain their parenting skills and teachers to focus on students' academics.
And I think it is time in this country that we abolish boarding schools completely and we make our public schools, day schools, quality and state of the art so that parents can take care of children after 5 o'clock and bring them to us on the next day at 8 o'clock.
Kisumu Boys High School is one of the schools that has recently experienced an arson attack where a dormitory was razed to the ground and property worth hundreds of thousands destroyed. This teacher from the school, who prefers to be anonymous, told VOA that students were responsible for the arson. He blames the behavior on the long stay at home during the COVID period and the fact that the learners are still struggling to adjust to the school routine. On the other hand, Cabinet Secretary for Education, Professor George Magoha, says that teachers will also be held responsible for any fires at their schools because they have the mandate to prevent such behavior from happening. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA in Nairobi, Kenya.
Zimbabwean journalist Hopeful Chinono has been making headlines for his multiple arrests, triggered last year by his social media post highlighting government corruption. Now, just recently released on bail for yet another alleged violation, Chinono is making fresh headlines, this time for rapping. His tweet, rapping a reggae beat on the level of looting by Zimbabwean government officials and members of the ruling ZANU-FP party, has yet set another local Twitter record for the award-winning journalist. Chinono spoke with VOA Zimbabwe service reporter Gibbs Dube about his song, Damn Loot.
It was never put out as a piece of journalism. This was just Hopeful, the citizen, who was I was in my study where exactly where I'm sitting right now. I was reading and I got bored and I started reflecting as I had been doing when I was in prison. Mm-hmm. About conversations I was having with so many youths last year when I was accusing them of not participating in political, economic and social issues that affect their day-to-day lives. And then I decided to say, oh, you know, a lot of our youth in Zimbabwe, they listen to reggae music. Let me try and just do something talking about the issues that I encourage them to engage with on a day-to-day basis and see how they will react. So that's what I did, and then when I put it out, it went viral. It was never a form of journalism. It was just me as a citizen just interacting with the youths and using a language and art form that they are more comfortable with.
But as a journalist, is this not toxic in terms of your writing? Because when you look at fairness and impartiality, it means you are wearing a jacket of a journalist every hour, every minute, every second. So does this not discredit you somehow?
No, it doesn't discredit me. Newspapers have editorials. They comment on issues that affect citizens that they're covering. Television stations have talk shows, like the one that we're having at the moment. People are expressing opinion. And what I did with that song, I was expressing opinion and fact, because it is a fact, and I've proved it, that man is being looted. So I was just saying what I say every day when I write newspaper columns for international newspapers like the New York Times or the Guardian, or when I'm reporting for the BBC. I was just doing it using an art form that I knew would be more receptive. The youth would be more receptive to it if I used that art form. It could have been, the words that I used in that song could have been in an article in the New York Times. So I just see it as a different platform that I used, but otherwise there's no difference.
That's Hopewell Chinono, a Zimbabwean investigative journalist. He was speaking with VOA's Zimbabwe service, Gibbs Dube. We love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your brief comments about issues in our news or what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We'll air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Todi by Oliver Mtukudzi.
Oh, Todi, what shall we do?
What shall we do?
We've been listening to Oliver Mtukudzi with the song Todi. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, vehicles, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
What shall we do?